Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to New Books in Psychoanalysis, a podcast channel of the New Books Network. My name is Roy Barsnes, and I'm host of the channel. Today, I'm interviewing Willow Pearson and Helen Marlowe, authors of The Spiritual Psyche in Psychotherapy, Mysticism, Intersubjectivity, and Psychoanalysis. It was published by Routledge in 2021. Wilson is Director of Clinical Training and faculty member of the Department of Clinical Psychology at Notre Dame de Namur University in Belmont, California. Did I say Namur correctly? Oh, good. She is Associate Professor of the Clinical Psychology Department at the California Institute of Integral Studies. She's a psychologist, psychotherapist, and music therapist, and has a private practice in Oakland, California, serving adults and couples. Helen is professor and chair of the Department of Clinical Psychology at Notre Dame de Namur University in Belmont, California. She's a psychologist and psychoanalyst, a member of the C.G. Jung Institute of San Francisco, and maintains a private practice in San Mateo, California. Welcome to the program, Helen and Willow. It's just a delight to have you here.
Thank you so much.
Yes.
Delighted to be here.
Well, it's good to have you. So why don't we just start with getting acquainted with you and why the two of you decided to write this book?
Why don't you start, Willow?
Well, I would say one of the primary catalysts for writing this book together is the experience of working with and teaching with Helen. We had the opportunity to do a lecture together. It was actually on dreaming. And I think that through the portal of teaching together, we were really able to express to one another in our scholarship and in our preparation and in our lecture, our passion for depth-oriented approaches to psychotherapy and psychology. And so that exchange of ideas, I think, seeded the way. And working together and being able to steward clinicians in training has been a wonderful opportunity to collaborate and think together about what are the core aspects of what make depth-oriented and integrative-oriented psychotherapist. So those conversations have been a big part of what I think created the mix and the sounding board for collaborating on this book. That's my part of my sense of it. Helen, what about for you?
Yeah, you know, I think it's not very often that we have in our training programs that can be depth oriented and also spiritually informed, and the spiritual is integrated in. And so a lot of times you get departments and training that's not as holistic. And so it was a really nice complement in that way. And that's always been the thread in the master's program at Notre Dame de Namur University. So it was a wonderful collaboration in that way, where both Willow and I had those twin values and, presence or disciplines, as you said earlier, in terms of your own book. I think there's also been a kind of a more of a rapprochement between psychoanalysis and spirituality now in these times. And, you know, there's been such a misuse of the term evidence-based. And I think that's left something that many of us, many of us are feeling like it's an inadequate explanation, and being able, how do you explain when certain things that are supposed to be evidence-based don't fit the evidence, and so certain things that are harder to quantify and measure, I think there's been that pull, I think, for me around getting this book out too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's why I'm so grateful for this book, as I believe it fills in some of those empty spaces within the field of psychology, and especially as you talk about evidence-based and our general lack of attention to the spiritual. You're probably aware of the Norcross-Lambert 30-year study for APA, and they recently came out with that evidence-based relational treatments must be taught as frequently as evidence-based treatments. And when I look at your book, the spiritual and the relational are not only intersecting, they're just like symbiotic, right? In terms of the development of our own lives and our own spirituality. But why do you think there is this lack in the field of psychology where the spiritual is ignored or almost ignored? Yeah, we don't talk much about it. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are about that. And because I'm sure that's what motivated you to write this text.
Very much so. I mean, I would follow up on what Helen said by just saying, I think that part of what is most important about being a psychologist or psychotherapist, a clinician, is to be able to be with the unknown and to be able to be present with the unknown as you are discovering together with the patient, with the client, what is emerging inside of them, emerging between you and the patient, and emerging in the relational field, in the presence that you're experiencing together. And I think that that is one of the most challenging things about our discipline, is that you're on the edge of the known really all the time. And how do you speak to that, and how do you engage with that, and how do you create the conditions to allow for that emergence? I think that's very much what the intersection of mysticism, intersubjectivity, and psychoanalysis is about, as I understand it. And I think that's a big part of what the need is, and also what the fear is, the fear of the unknown.
Right. And actually where it is, right? I mean, that's where the work is in that edge of the fear of the unknown, like you just said.
Absolutely.
I think, you know, to answer your question too, Roy, you know, I think that depth psychologists, psychoanalysts, we all feel generally very passionate about that particular way of being and healing. I think sometimes it can almost take on a quality of a religion, a quality of spirituality. And yet it's not necessarily the same thing, and they don't necessarily address it all. So I do think that, you know, because the work we do can often be so profound and so transformative, whether it's, you know, Freudian or Jungian or relational or Lacanian, I think there can be a way that it can supplant a respect for spirituality as a compatible discipline. You also said something that I thought was really interesting when we were chatting before we began this interview, and that was around writing your own wonderful book, Core Competencies of Relational Psychoanalysis. You mentioned that, you know, you felt like perhaps a part of your spiritual side was maybe diminished a little bit, and that you were engrossed in that. And one of the things I thought about with your wonderful question was that it feels like you know, and I speak a little bit about this in the book, that, you know, it's been so relational psychoanalysis has brought so much beauty and connection and healing. But I think there can be a way that it can eclipse the spiritual psyche, kind of like maybe what you experienced a little bit in being immersed in that and writing that book. And so, you know, when you have a lot of neuropsychoanalytic and developmental and attachment kind of ideas, relational ideas that have all been wonderful, I think it can be, there can be a way that there can be a diminishment and an attention to the spiritual. And a term I used in my, one of my chapters was divine relationality, and that idea of the relational component with divinity, however we experience it. So those are just two things I thought about in addition to the usual culprits of, you know, evidence base and spirituality and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. You know, that takes me to when I was in seminary, there was a big, large movement in me away from the God that was way out there to the God that was present, or the mystical that's here, the transcendent is among us. And I remember thinking of, I wrote a little paper that said, this hospitality of my parents is actually a Eucharistic event. And I went to this whole idea of Buber, that when we meet in the in between, in the I Thou, therein is the eclipse of the transcendent, the unknown. Yeah,
that's so beautifully said. Between the I Thou is the eclipse of the transcendent. Mm-hmm. That's gorgeous.
Yeah. Well, and I felt like your book was almost all the way through saying that, it seemed like a very consistent theme. Yeah. You mentioned how psychotherapy tends to want, and I think this is related to this idea of evidence-based. Everything is to alleviate, right? To get rid of, to fix, to have a solution, whereas analytic thought seeks to receive it. And I felt that very powerfully in your book. And in doing so, I think you introduced to the reader, and you definitely did to me, a bridge to the spiritual. And you state actually in your outcomes that the therapeutic outcomes are this sense of wonder and awe, confusion and chaos, connection and companionship. And I'll quote you here, where you say, "In these sacred places reside joy and sorrow, courage and fear, fulfillment and yearning, emergence and dissolution, and creation and destruction." Holy Moses, that's nicely said, right? And and so much of our psychologists, I think, have split that and said only joy, only wonder, only, you know, not the other. And you guys, I think, really hit home, at least for me, this both and. Do you want to comment further on that? Did I get it right? Can you elaborate?
Absolutely. Thank you. I think, you know, for me, there was a moment of recognition and catalytic presence when I read one of our contributing authors, Robin Greenberg. In her chapter, she, I'll just paraphrase her, but she essentially said, you know, so often we're confused and we think we come into psychotherapy because we want to get rid of suffering. But actually the work in psychotherapy is about receiving suffering. And I thought she just put it so beautifully and clearly. And I think that that is the turn from a surface-oriented work to a depth-oriented work, is that turn from wanting to, because of course we all have the pull to want to get rid of suffering. That's just such a human drive. And I think it takes the kind of turnings of teachings throughout our lives that psychotherapy can help with, which is to turn towards the suffering as its own treasure trove of learning and of wisdom, and how to be with that and how to work with that and learn from that.
Yeah, And I think the other thing, I think that's really well said, Willow. I think the other thing you said that, you know, at times as we were writing this book and editing it, we could get a little bit lost in it is the both and. And the both and can be endless. And at some point, sometimes you have to do one or the other, or you will just completely get lost in the cosmos. But the both and, you know, the joy and the pain, I think that is something that is different about this kind of approach. And it's like the both and can be, you know, that an experience in analysis or in therapy can be looked at as, you know, a developmental wound and be treated through, you know, a corrective experience in the work or through, you know, working it within the transference. But that doesn't also foreclose that there can be a spiritual or mystical dimension, a transpersonal dimension that can be equally equally important. So I think that both and speaks to all the different layers, you know, sometimes what might look like very concrete, even a kind of social work intervention with a patient might be actually ministering to the deepest part of their soul too. So I think that both and was something we struggled with or we wanted to flesh out because it can often, one or the other can often get lost in some forms of work.
Yeah. Where that takes me too is again, the relational part that's so prevalent in your book is the authenticity that we try to achieve in a analysis is the idea of there's going to be rupture, right? There's going to be love and there's going to be hate. There's going to be sorrow and there's going to be joy. And what I hear in what you're saying is that, or maybe I'm putting my own take on this, it seems at times that the therapist and the therapy tries to avoid ruptures rather than entering them, receiving them, and living then in the paradox of the both and. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was very much the arc of learning, I think, for me over the last 25 years of doing this work. And I think for me, of coming from, I was trained in the transpersonal and humanistic modes of work from a mindfulness space. And then later in the work came to psychoanalysis. And so I think that for me, part of this book is very much about integrating the transpersonal, the humanistic, the mindfulness-based, the spiritual with the psychoanalytic, and understanding how they combine in my own practice. And for me, that divide that you're talking about, the resistance of rupture and repair versus the embrace of rupture and repair as one of the necessary foundations of a psychoanalytic psychotherapy has been one of the key turnings for me in my own development as a clinician. And so that's very much why I wanted to write about it in the chapter on reckoning with the spiritual.
Yeah. And you did well on that.
Thank you.
Yeah. In writing this book, what kinds of, what happened to your own spiritual life and your own practices as you were tending to the words of this book? Yeah. I think, Helen, you said something, you know, that I got so immersed in the whole idea of my book that I missed something about the spiritual, right? That I had said to you before we met.
And yeah.
I'm wondering, as you were immersed in your book, what was your practices and your personal life? How is it being impacted by these essays and your own interaction with it?
That's a really great question. In a weird way, I became more aware, and they became both more integrated and more separate, perhaps, like more defined, like I could differentiate them a little bit more, perhaps. And in the midst of writing, right around when we wrote this book, I, lost my father right at the time all this was kind of happening, and it was a cascade of losses. So it was very it was a very powerful time for me personally in terms of how that fit with spirituality and psychology and psychoanalysis. So I think there was something about that that dovetailed too. It almost felt synchronistic, you know, in an odd kind of way that I'd be writing this book at this time of you know, the book followed that time. So,
you know, what I try to come to expression about what I'm feeling, what I'm thinking in this moment is there was something very transformative about receiving the original work of each of the contributing authors and really caring for it, really stewarding it as a co-editor, and really wanting it to come into being, to bring it into life, to help midwife that work. And so there was a way in which, as it came through my own reading and editing process with that care and stewardship, was like really a process of almost taking in the voice of the author as if it were my own, in order to feel into the depth of what each person was saying and how to try to help steward it in the ultimate expression of the book in my job as editor. And I felt received in exactly the same way when I shared my own chapters with Helen and with the wonderful editors that stewarded the book. I felt received in that way of where knowing that my voice would really be taken in. And there's something just very transformative about that. I really come back to my my music therapy self. My practice in music is like that kind of deep listening. It's hard to really paradoxically find words right now to express just how transformative that deep listening really is. And I think I didn't know when I started the project the kind of deep listening that editing would require. And I think I found a new listening practice in the process that is akin to but distinct from the space of serving as a clinician.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think has the same healing property.
Yeah.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can go back to doing what you love this spring. Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. And this is the part I really like. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning. You simply heat and savor the good stuff. Factor is the solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. Head to factormeals.com/NBN50 and use code NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code NBN50 at factormeals.com/NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Well, as I kept reading your book, it's something about that deep listening, that relational holding, that participation with the other, that leaves me this question that I'd like for you to play with me on. Because for my own work over the years, there's been this emphasis on integration, spirituality, and psychology. But I'm now wondering if spirituality and psychology are already integrated and that we've just been separating them, inadvertently de-integrating them, if you will. And what I mean by that is perhaps the sacred is always present. So when you talk about deep listening, or we talk about the deep encounter with another person, perhaps, again, there is the glimpse of the transcendent, right? There is something beyond us when we are absolutely engaged in the depth of another human soul. And Greenberg says this, the creator is hidden in the contraction, or is that contradiction? I'm not sure. I think it might, I don't know. But it says contraction in the book, but which is invisible and unknowable and yet embedded in everything. So I ask you this question, could it be that in the very act of an in-depth psychoanalysis, therein lies the ineffable?
Helen?
Well, I think I would say a qualified yes. And I think we played with this a little bit idea about the idea of, there is no spiritual psyche and there is only the spiritual psyche. And it's reminding me a little bit of us playing with that idea. So I think it's a both and, right? And so I want to be able to say yes. And then another part of me says, it also depends on how the therapy and the analysis is really held and conducted. Because I think if the analyst lacks that, if the therapist doesn't have that spirit, then there is something that's lost. I thought, Roy, when you asked about how did my work change upon writing it, I would also say that I was always seeing these spiritual dimensions from very early on in my practice as a clinician, and that was what my evidence and what was so affirming for me. I realized that more came as a result of me writing this book, because my attention, it wasn't like my attention was creating something that wasn't there, but I was attending to and cultivating and stewarding something that had the presence. So I think to your point, there's always that potential, but it may not be realized, I think, depending on how integrated that is within oneself, So some people, like kind of to your point, see themselves as whole people and healthy people, but not necessarily spiritual or certainly not religious people. And I think there is something missing when we don't have a lens and an awareness of those depths in the transpersonal, particularly if someone's thinks of their own psychoanalysis or their own way of therapy is a kind of religion, then there can be almost a religious fervor to keeping the frame consistent or, correct interpretation or the correct, corrective experience that's done. And all of that might be good technique and be called good analysis. God forbid we do any kind of wild analysis, right? As was said many years ago. But it may lack that element of spirit. So I can think of times I've made exceptions or done something because it was more informed by that dimension of the spiritual psyche. So I want to say yes, and I want to qualify it. So,
yeah, I really like that. And Willow, I want to hear your start with that too. But when you're talking, there was correct that you were using. And I was going, oh my God. And it reminds me of, if I get to the next book, I want to call it The Imperfect Therapist, because it's when we're incorrect that there's hope.
Yes. Yes.
Absolutely. Thinking about the importance of that rupture and repair again.
Yeah. Yeah.
That it's in the fragmentation that there's a movement towards wholeness.
Yeah. Yeah. And onto the unknown, like you guys talk about in this book, onto that which we cannot know, and that there's something that feels exciting about that rather than fearful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I wanted to say, as I read your book, there was a surge of energy that actually rippled through me. As I read it, something more than words was getting aroused in me. Something or someone other than me seemed to join me and comfort me at the same time. And that something, someone, some presence, and I didn't have explanation for it. So I began to think of this, and I wanted to get your thoughts on it. My own spiritual self in reading this book seemed to come alive again. It made me wonder if the spiritual self, much like Eros, that the spiritual also sneaks up on us and spirits us, if you will, into a different space. And just as Eros just happens and excites, and we cannot explain it, maybe this is also true of the spiritual. I don't know. What do you think of that?
I think that that's beautifully said. Mm. And I'm really struck as you say that, in the experience of what it's like to resonate with a part of our reality that is revealed in both presence and in mind and in embodied words. And so as you speak that experience into existence, I find myself resonating with it. And it feels like my experience in the deep listening of the editing process, for example, too, very akin to that, which is it opens that space in me that is sort of in wait for that expression.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And your expression gives a kind of openness and a kind of permission and a kind of invitation to that presence in me.
I think that's well, I guess all I would just add is that I'm thinking of that old fashioned term parallel process when it comes to supervision. And I felt the same way with your questions. And so, in that enlivening process and then seeing where it leads. So I think that I definitely agree with both of you on that. So I think that when we are speaking and writing authentically, it has a way of touching those parts of the psyche, and that when we're on that spiritual journey or that journey towards consciousness, then we can be more open to it too. And it can't help but go somewhere inside.
Yeah. Your response to the questions was lovely for me, but it was sort of like we found something in the between of us that we didn't know, right? Until we reacted to one another or had a feeling or an experience of the other through each other's work, you know, my questions simply, but your work. So in the book, Willow asks Helen, is this teachable? Which I can imagine everybody listening to this is saying, is it teachable? And so Helen, you get to tell us if this can be taught.
Well, I've got the answer right here. I know it exactly. I got the correct answer.
Yeah. Good. Looking forward to it.
Drum roll, please. Right.
Yeah.
I do believe it's teachable. Although, of course, you know, like both of you, my life has been, you know, had of being an educator, academic, as well as a practitioner. But I think there is something about the to know. You know, one of the things that Jung always said that is that idea of individuation, and that we have the capacity to continue to grow throughout the lifetime through a number of different ways. So I always look at it through that lens of individuation. And so, you know, insofar as spirituality is also a developmental process, is also, needless to say, a transpersonal and spiritual process, I have some trust in both developmental and spiritual forces being there to always remain open. So, you know, I think thinking about the idea of individuation, and, you know, one of the leanings I've had to Jung is that it's a progressive psychology, that we keep growing, that there's the quality of emergence, there's a quality of how things like associations and relationships and can continue to grow our personality, and that includes in the spiritual world. So I think life will reveal it to us, and we may choose to listen or not. And we may choose to access and take off that call to be born into something or reborn into something. I think that, you know, one of the things I talked about in my chapter around dissociation is that dissociation is a normal human process. You know, Jung originally in his original writings spoke about that is the way that we get new things in. That is the way dissociation is necessary almost for growth and for creativity. And so I think if we choose to stay open to that, then we can listen to that. And, you know, a synchronicity hits us over the head, a spiritual awakening happens, a spiritual moment happens, the inexplicable is right in front of us, and we can't, you know, we can't deny it. This might be to someone who's an avowed non-spiritual person, for example. They may choose then to listen to that and do something with that. So I think that's something I've certainly seen in my own work, where I may not be advertising that myself as a therapist, as an analyst, but I'm holding that with my patient. And then these things start happening and they're like, wait a minute. And many people take up the mantle of choosing to develop and integrate that. So yeah, I think that there's a lot of ways that we can choose to become related to that. And that's, I think, a teachable thing, that process of relating to
it. Okay. And Willow, you are the one who asked her the question. So how do you feel about her answer?
Well, you know, it's interesting what's really present for me in this moment. I've been curious about it in conjunction with hearing Helen's response. Is I'm very present with a moment that I was taught. And that was a moment in talking with the late Dr. James Grotstein, who I had the great privilege of learning from in a few conversations, just a few short conversations over the last 3 or 4 years of his life. And what really stands out for me in this moment, for whatever reason, is I remember one of our very first conversations, and they were all by phone. I actually never met him in person. I only talked with him over the phone. And he said to me, and this was when I was a graduate student, and I approached him because I was so thunderstruck by his work and I so dearly wanted to study with him, but he wasn't teaching out in the community at that point in time. But he made himself available by phone. And he said, psychoanalysis is, and I'm paraphrasing, but what I remember him saying is something to the effect of, psychoanalysis is reinvented and invented anew with each person that comes into contact with it. And what he did in that moment is he made me, as a graduate student, feel utterly invited to the banquet table of psychoanalysis. And he was saying, bring your thoughts, bring your learning, bring your wonderment, bring your ideas, bring your curiosity. You are fully welcome here. This is part of how psychoanalysis gets grows and develops and continues. And so that was a moment that I was taught by Dr. Grotstein about what it meant to be invited into the conversation of psychoanalysis. And it will remain with me for the rest of my life. And I share it when you ask the question that I asked Helen of, is it teachable? Because that was a moment definitely where I learned something from Dr. Grotstein about it being teachable.
That's so good. As I hear it, it doesn't have bullet points, right? It has you in it, and it has the relationship in it, and it's teachable through experience. And so when you brought up Grotstein, even, I had my own experience with him where I asked him a question one time, and he very, because he had a very rich religious life of his own. Whatever, I asked him a question, and he said, he said, you're from a strict Christian background, I bet, or right? And what he was trying to say there is, that's the only thing you're bringing to the table. He didn't say this, but basically the banquet table is abundant, and you're limiting your mind to one thing. And that was a very pivotal moment for me in my own spiritual development. And I'm grateful to you to remind me of that today, because I didn't know that was part of it all. So, yeah.
Lovely.
Yeah, thank you. There's a consistent Jungian theme throughout the book. Why do you think that might be the case? And somewhere in the book, Jung sort of indicates that he didn't want to see his thinking, right, as necessarily a religious piece, or did I miss that? I don't know. But you talk to me about it. So what do you make of Jung being kind of the, I don't know, he's a very important part. When we talk about spirituality and psychoanalysis, the Jungian idea always emerges. And so why do you think that is? And are there other analytic authors that are influencing spirituality in psychoanalysis from our past or today?
Huh? Well, you know, beyond the fact that I'm trained through the Jung Institute of San Francisco and so forth, I think Jung is most known, I think, for being, of all the psychoanalysts, the one that's most aligned with spirituality. Probably lesser known are how relational his earliest ideas were and just how pivotal they were to the Freud-Jung split. They were actually relational ideas that led to this huge rupture between Freud and Jung. And a lot of people aren't really aware of that. And some of it was really around, you know, this split of that relationship doesn't include spirituality, the split with spirituality. So I think, you know, that like I said, there's been much more of a rapprochement where it used to be, you know, Jung was the wild mystic that, you know, and wasn't really real psychoanalysis. I think for a lot of us Jungians, our egos have not been attached to those things, and we're far more attached to the truth of spirit and the truth of soul and the truth of these inexplicable things, the spiritual transpersonal level. So we've suffered through that in a time where psychoanalysis and depth approaches were trying to establish themselves legitimately and so forth. So, you know, I think there's maybe a level of growth and confidence and attention to that way of working that naturally makes it easier to contribute to a book too. I'm very pluralistic in how I work. I don't feel, you know, wed to one depth approach, and have a lot of colleagues from a lot of different, you know, schools of psychoanalysis and, you know, other schools of psychotherapy, whether it's CBT or humanistic or systems. But it is interesting to me. It's been humbling to see, and it's surprising sometimes that what just seems like a given for me in analysis around spirituality or soul, some of my other just as talented, equally devoted psychoanalytic colleagues are like, oh, I've never looked at it like that. So, you know, there is something interesting about, you know, being steeped in a training. And, you know, one of the reasons why I trained at the Jung Institute was it was more spacious. You didn't have to apologize or justify or hide this part of yourself that some of my colleagues that are in relational training or Freudian training or other kinds of training are like, oh, that's considered taboo. So I think, you know, I don't think it's as in the closet anymore as it used to be, but I think we've been so used to having to go through that, you know, that being marginalized or seen as less than or seen as ungrounded if you connect with this. So that said, I think that would be my two cents on
Jung and path. Well, I have to also say you bring Jung in this book to us as a relationalist. So that was really a nice bridge too. I'm hoping that other analytic authors besides yourself and Jung, and of course there are others. I know my friend Brad Strawn at Fuller Seminary does a lot of integration around this and the Boston program out in the Daniel Institute and places such as that. But, and you know, Lou Aaron really began to pull out the spiritual in us, I felt too, in some of his work. So I know that we're missing a lot, and because there's a lot, but I wanted to ask you that question. Do you have, Willow, do you want to add to that?
Sure.
Yeah, I think for me, you know, my early training, as I referred to, was at Naropa University in Boulder, Colorado. And that was a wonderful, rich place to celebrate spirit. And really, my experience there with the transpersonal and with expressive arts through music therapy really brought that forward. But when I came into relational psychoanalysis, it was really James Grotstein's work that opened the door for me in a new way to the whole pantheon of the relational lineage and the psychoanalytic lineage. And he helped me access Bion's work. And so Bion's work has been very important for me, particularly as it's been translated not only and developed and furthered, not only by Grotstein, but also by Dr. Michael Eigen, whose work has been very formative for me in terms of studying and learning from his work in his books. And I would say most recently, another theorist, clinician, scholar, practitioner, author who's brought these ideas forward for me in really helpful ways is Dr. Ofra Eshel. She has her book, The Emergence of Analytic Oneness Into the Heart of Psychoanalysis. And she really brings together Bion and Winnicott in original and beautiful ways that have been very instructive for me. And so I love teaching from her work because she brings forward an analytic perspective on oneness that is very helpful in terms of these disciplines or competencies or presences, as we've called them, in relational psychoanalysis.
I would say another author, I didn't answer that, but one author that I thought I would just put a plug in that is interesting, and I don't know if you're familiar with Dr. Edward Kelly and Dr. Paul Marshall, but they wrote an interesting series. They're not necessarily in the world of psychoanalysis, but they had started a series called Irreducible Mind. And that was their first book many years ago. And then they had one that came out last year called Beyond Physicalism, and it's toward a reconciliation of science and spirituality. And their forthcoming book is going to be Consciousness Unbound, Liberating Mind from the Tyranny of Materialism. But I found their work is very integration, you know, there's a lot of integration and diverse perspectives. And I found it interesting so as not to get tunnel vision in one perspective. So I thought that was an interesting recent read I had on this idea of the spiritual. So,
what about the two of you? Are you, what's your next writing project?
Well, I'm really excited that a book that I've contributed to, speaking of Dr. Michael Eigen's work, it's called Healing, Rebirth, and the Work of Michael Eigen. And it's co-edited by Ken Fuchsman and Carrie Cohen. And it's coming out in just a couple of weeks in March by Routledge. And the book is actually based on a conference from the International Association of Psychohistory that did a conference where Dr. Eigen was one of the keynote presenters, and many practitioners wrote papers that were applying his ideas in original ways. And so this book, this edited book, is a collection of those papers of applying and taking further and playing with Dr. Eigen's work.
Nice. He's a character, isn't he?
He's a wonderful character. Yes, indeed.
Yeah, that's wonderful. So before we come to our end, just tell us a bit of the structure of the book and also how you chose this cast of contributors.
Well, the book itself is composed of taking up theory, taking up clinical vignettes, and story and personal exploration of the clinical encounter. And one of the unique chapters in the book is an interview that I do with Helen, where I'm able to really ask her about her many years of Jungian psychoanalytic practice and the way that she has stewarded that into the world in all her many superhero ways. So that was a fun chapter to do that is a little departure from some of the structure of the other chapters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Helen, how did you guys choose these contributors?
Well, I think, you know, a lot of them were colleagues that whose work we, you know, we appreciated or who we appreciated as people, and we really were interested in really getting a very diverse, you know, multifaceted kind of perspective. So, you know, not wed to one orientation, whether it's psychoanalytic or spiritual practice. So I think we liked the idea of trying to find people that were diverse in that way, you know, pluralistic, both in their approach to depth psychology as well as spirituality. I think another important piece for both Willow and I, if I could speak for both of us, I think we both liked the notion of having active practitioners that also brought scholarship and not people writing books that, you know, aren't actively steeped in the real day-to-day work of it. Cause I think that makes a difference, you know? So I think those would be a couple things that came to my mind.
And if I can, Roy, maybe I could just read the list of contributing authors. So there are Dr. Robin Begay, Dr. Mitchell Becker, Robin Greenberg, Dr. Shifa Hack, Catherine Olivetti, and Dr. Brian Wittin. And so the six of them joined Helen and I in contributing the different chapters of the book.
Yes. And like you said, represented different spiritual and religious ideas and ologies. And
Yes. And
we're all practicing, which is also a very lovely kind of, I don't know, it's always better if we're in it rather than just talking about it.
Yeah, and maybe just to mention particularly some of those spiritual traditions that we draw from, if I may, Vajrayana Buddhism and Zen Buddhism, Christianity and Catholicism, Ecumenicism and integral spirituality, Judaism and Kabbalah, nonviolence, Sufism and Vedanta are all some of the traditions that our various authors culled from in putting together these chapters.
Yeah. It's a really wonderful work. I'm so grateful that you guys got inspired to do this because it's I think a really important contribution to our discussion of spirituality. For our listeners, is there anything you'd like to leave them with? Some sort of thought or, well, we'll call it a benediction even to this time.
I suppose one thing that comes up just impromptu is, you know, much like we had a parallel process of the questions you asked, and at least for me, the questions, what came up for me with your questions and vice versa, I guess maybe one way to try to be related to and connect to that spirit is to see what emerges for anyone after listening to this piece and to be curious about that. And is that a nod that spirit is having? And so that would be just one thought I have, is to watch that enlivening process that may come from listening and being in this time together. So I guess that would be one benediction.
That's wonderful, Helen. I will do the same upon the end of this. I'll see what it continues in me. Thank you. Mm-hmm. What about you, Willow?
Well, I think just in this moment, as I take up Helen's benediction, what occurs to me is to be attentive to spirit's play.
Mm-hmm.
That it is truly in the playfulness that spirit has the enjoyment of revealing her face, his face, its face, their face.
Mm-hmm.
So I think being available to that which emerges from within oneself, as well as between one and the other, that spirit can poke its face out into this material world from behind our own face, as well as between looking at our, these days, video cameras on screen.
Right.
And to be present for when spirit comes out to play.
Uh-huh. Maybe mine, to join you in it, I'll just go back to one of the questions I had had for you, is that letting the spiritual sneak up on us and spirit us into a different space with each other, with ourselves, perhaps.
I love that.
Yeah.
That's so
good. Very much so.
It has been wonderful.
It's funny. It's funny because one of the questions I didn't follow up on answering to you, but I meant to, was actually about, you know, it's really not spirit playing when I really think about it concretely, but spirit is playing. So, you know, you asked about books that we're working on or next projects. And I didn't get a chance to tell you, I was going to share with you when you got to that phase, that, you know, the book that you wrote on core competencies of relational psychoanalysis, it actually was something that was very inspiring to me. And there's something that I've been thinking about turning into a book for kind of core ideas about psychoanalysis that have come from my psychoanalytic psychotherapy class at Notre Dame de Namur. So I've taught it for many years, and it has a very similar structure. And so when I've been thinking about this next project, your book was one of the ones that came to my mind, because I'm trying to distill core ideas across the different schools and getting at what are we really talking about in a more jargon-free way. And so so that's why I say it's not going to be spiritual playing with spirit. It's going to be a lot of work, but but I think spirit is poking his or her head out right here. I just think it's funny because your book was one of the few books I've seen that actually tries to distill down what's core. And so I'm trying to, that's one thing I've been wanting to do, is to distill some of these core ideas and across the different schools of psychoanalysis and make it more accessible for people that, you know, psychoanalysis, oh my God, that's weird, or that's this, or that's too dense, or what. So try to make it really understandable without losing the depth. So anyway, so spirit is playing. So Willow, to your benediction, I think it just manifested. So.
And I hope when we are finished here, that you will be spirited to go back to your desk immediately and start on that wonderful book that I can hardly wait to read. That'll be wonderful and a major contribution to this kind of conversation. So,
hear, hear.
Yeah. Well, I hate to go. It's been really fun to participate and co-create and imagine together on this really critical, I think, part of our lives and in our work. So thank you so very much. Yeah.
Thank you so much for receiving our work in this way and for allowing us the opportunity to speak with you about it.
Yeah, it's been very good. Yeah.
We were so touched and honored by your interest and, you know, today, your generous interview and your presence. And so you certainly embody the very book you wrote, and you know what a journey that is for any of us as authors. So thank you for honoring our work in this way. I'm very touched. So I appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, it's an honorable work. So thank you so much. You've been listening to an interview with Willow Pearson and Helen Marlowe about their book, The Spiritual Psyche in Psychotherapy: Mysticism, Intersubjectivity, and Psychoanalysis, here at New Books in Psychoanalysis, a channel on the New Books Network. If you have any questions, you can contact me at Dr. Roy Barsness, rbarsness157@gmail.com, to let us know any thoughts and questions. Thank you both very, very much, and God bless.
Thank you so much, Roy.
And you. Yeah.
All right.